6 p.m. GRUEN Gruen Precision Watch Time. Help prevent wartime accidents. This is WEAF, New York.
Here's Don Hollenbeck with the 6 o'clock news, a program presented by Peter Paul, makers of chocolate coconut mounds.
The news report tonight will make it clear why this is called the blackest day for Germany since the war began. Almost complete collapse in Italy, Berlin three-quarters gone, Stettin and Bremen down, Brno and Czechoslovakia in Russian hands, and Patton about 70 miles from Berchtesgaden. A story about Mussolini I fervently hope is true, and a real fantasy about Hitler. Marshal Pétain's return to France and news of a local hero in the Pacific. A report on the first business session of the San Francisco conference. Details of these and other happenings after a word from Arthur Gary.
Are you sometimes too busy at noontime to enjoy a full-course lunch? Here's a tip from a man who's busy all day at important war work. A sandwich and a glass of milk is all the lunch he has time for. But he likes to top it off with a bar of Peter Paul's Mounds. Makes a delightful dessert, gives him the energy and nourishment he needs. Tree-ripened coconut, delicious chocolate. Mounds are rich in energy, rich in nourishment, rich in pure eating enjoyment. Chocolate coconut mounds. M-O-U-N-D-S. What a bar of candy for 5 cents. Now, back to Don Hollenbeck.
For the first time in a long time, Italy takes the top spot in the news, and as one of the original visitors at Salerno so long ago, where we got hit for 3,500 casualties in 1 week, I hope I can be forgiven for some personal pleasure in telling the story today. The story is the Germans in Italy are completely folding up. The Fifth Army today captured Verona in the foothills of the Alps. We are landing at Rapallo, 15 miles south of Columbus's hometown of Genoa, and the German retreat has become so confused that, as one Fifth Army officer said, we just don't know where they are. Italian patriots are reported unofficially to have liberated Genoa, Milan, and Turin, and there's a remarkable story about Mussolini that later. The Rome radio says that the Patriot insurrection in northern Italy is sweeping away all German resistance, and while Allied headquarters hasn't put an official confirmation on this, there seems to be no reason to doubt it. A radio station identifying itself as the Free Genoa Station went on the air today with an exultant communique proclaiming the end of German resistance there, and similar reports are heard from Turin and Milan, backed up by Swiss accounts which say the Patriots now control districts all the way to the frontier. It would seem the greater part of the Germans milling around in northern Italy are hopelessly trapped. The capture of Verona seals off the chance of their withdrawal into the Bavarian redoubt. The total of prisoners has already exceeded a third of the German force, and this is far behind actual events. While on the Eighth Army front, the Germans have abandoned so much equipment and motor transport that supply officers have so far been unable to count it. The Eighth Army, by the way, is driving hard to hit what remains of the German line on the Adige River, 30 miles from Venice, but they don't expect to find much left of it there. And Tito's Yugoslavs are going to town, too, town being Fiume, where they are reported in the outskirts, with the Germans blowing up military installations as they pull out. Now the Mussolini story, which it is devoutly hoped is true. The Swiss Telegraph Agency, saying it has information from reliable sources, says that the busted Caesar has been captured by Italian patriots in the town of Pallanza on the western shore of Lake Maggiore. Looks as if he was heading for Valhalla, but will have to take a stopover. Earlier, there was a report from Switzerland that Mussolini had arrived at Como, some distance east of Maggiore, in disguise, of course, with one of his jackals, Roberto Farinacci, the fascist secretary. But Mussolini was recognized. It's hard to whitewash some sepulchres. And he's said to have sought sanctuary in the Como Monastery. The Russians now hold three-quarters of Berlin, with German resistance officially reported weakening, and they've driven 22 miles west of the encircled capital to within 14 and a half miles of a possible second juncture with the Americans on the Elbe. Already, Soviet shells are falling near the Ninth Army lines with the Russians at Rathenau. And with Berlin almost in their hands, the Red Armies took two other great prizes today, Stettin, the great naval base on the Baltic, and in Czechoslovakia, the arms center of Brno. The fall of Stettin opens the entire Baltic coast for a drive toward Rostock and Hamburg. Brno is just as rich a prize, one of the last great war production cities left to the Germans. In Berlin itself, there are stubborn battles in the northwest sector of the city, but the heaviest fighting is in the southeast, where the wide, fortified banks of the River Spree are the most formidable obstacles. Now some impressions of Berlin in its last hours. The Russians already control so much of the city that special street cleaning squads have been assigned, and telephone service will soon be linked up with Moscow. The Germans still insist Hitler is in Berlin, and Russian reporters today tell how Nazis disguised as priests are sneaking into sections of the city held by the Red Army. Russian army engineers have begun widening railway tracks to a gauge to fit their locomotives and cars. Scrawled on a wall was the inscription in German, 1918 won't be repeated. Under it in Russian, I, Sidorov, am in Berlin. Some German civilians are crawling into the Russian lines for safety. At the Tempelhof airdrome, the Russians captured a number of planes with warmed-up engines, some travelers who didn't get away. And a Russian correspondent writes today, the spring sun looks very pretty on the Berlin gardens. And there's the inevitable story of that stand-in for Hitler. It comes from the notoriously unreliable so-called Free German Press Service, and I tell it because it seems quite an example of the lengths to which Goebbels' pipe dreamers will go. The story says that a carefully rehearsed former grocer resembling Hitler has been sent to Berlin to die on the barricades while Hitler himself goes underground. The story even names the stand-in, August Wilhelm Bartholdy, once a grocer of Plauen. In the next few days, the yarn goes on, Bartholdy will appear in the final fighting where Hitler's personal photographer will record his last moments on the battlefield. Let us now put down our pipes, Mr. De Quincey, and return to more serious matters. The American, British, and French side of the German front marked a big day, too. In the north, General Dempsey's 2nd Army captured Bremen, the city that got rich on American trade, and has cleared it out except for the dock area. One of the day's principal features was a mass production drunk by thousands of liberated slave laborers who had located the Nazis' plentiful liquor supplies. To the south, General Patton's 3rd Army broke across the Danube at 3 points, almost encircling Regensburg and leaving that German Danube line shredded along a 180-mile front, and Munich threatened by 2 American columns less than 40 miles away at Ingolstadt. The 11th Armored Division drove to within 8.5 miles of Austria at Fierholz, and other columns of the 11th reached Tittling, 11 miles from Passau, which is the mountain gateway to Austria. Pilots report the Germans are gathering to make a stand at Passau. The 3rd Army is into Czechoslovakia on a 50-mile front, within 35 miles of Pilsen and the Skoda Works, and today it captured Eger, where in other days Hitler yawped about the annexation of the Sudetenland. The French 1st Army completed the envelopment of the Black Forest by driving up to the Swiss frontier all the way from Bâle, and the 7th Army has run into some tough going across the Danube near Dillingen. In the center of the front, German troops retreating from Berlin crowded the east bank of the Elbe, clamoring to be taken prisoner by the American 9th Army before the Russians engulfed them. And by the way, there's another report that the link-up has taken place. The Swiss and Brussels radios said a junction in the Elbe took place this afternoon along a front of many miles. This is not yet official. At the latest report, Hodge's 1st Army is still 18 miles from the Russians, and the 9th is 14.5 miles from them at Rathenau. Marshal Pétain has returned to France. This afternoon, he crossed the border from the Swiss town of Vallorbe and surrendered to French officers on a charge of high treason. The marshal and his party left the border for Les Hôpitaux Neufs, where they will take a special train for Paris. The marshal had been so far out of this world as to have expressed a plaintive wish that there might be some American soldiers on hand to meet him at the border, but this apparently couldn't be arranged. The marshal extended his hand to the French General Koenig, who did not take it. In Paris, it was announced by the prosecution that clemency will be asked for Pétain on the grounds of humanity, which brings up the question, how old is a villain? And it brings up the story of Marshal Goering, who, at his own request, has been relieved of his command as head of the almost non-existent German Air Force. He's a sick man, Goering says, and a story from NBC's Ed Hocker this afternoon explains why. Hocker has just visited one of Goering's lush palaces at Neuhaus, a 40 or 50-room affair now in the hands of the GIs. Goering left it about 4 weeks ago with 5 carloads of stolen art treasures, but he had to leave behind a lot of things. Valuable oriental rugs and paintings of nudes in the bathrooms, for instance, and a lot of silk bedsheets, 8x10. In the Pacific, the 1st Japanese defense line on southern Okinawa has been smashed, and our 24th Corps now controls the skyline overlooking the secondary defenses before Naha. About a third of the original Japanese garrison has been killed. Advances are reported from Luzon and Mindanao, and in Burma, British and Indian troops have gone down the road from Mandalay to within 140 miles of Rangoon. Today's hero in the Pacific is Steward's Mate Second Class Samuel C. Dixon, 29, of 92 West 18th Street, Bayonne. I remember him as a waiter at the New Yorker Hotel for 9 years. Dixon is 6'3", weighs 212 pounds, and he can use that heft. It's told today how when his ship was hit by a Japanese suicide plane off Okinawa 10 days ago, Dixon performed prodigies. To prevent explosions, he carried a case of 3-inch ammunition under each arm. They weigh only about 150 pounds a case. Sometimes he'd have a case of ammunition in one arm and be carrying a wounded man in the other. He would place a man in a stretcher on one deck and, single-handed, carry litter and patient to the deck below. All Dixon said is, we had to work hard and fast. At San Francisco, the United Nations held their first business meeting today with the prospect of a quick showdown and settlement on Russia's request for 3 votes, the question of Argentine participation, and some new move on the deadlocked Polish question. Molotov said he'd present the vote problem to the meeting today, but it's possible the Polish question will await further talks among Molotov, Harriman, and Clark Carr, the British ambassador to Moscow. The impression around the conference rooms is that the issues which have been keeping the delegates apart promise to be settled quickly, and the conference can be over in a month or less. The full dress session of the meeting starts at 7 o'clock tonight, Eastern Wartime, and NBC will carry a full report direct from the War Veterans Memorial Building. Belgium is in our ABC of the United Nations today, facts to remember in connection with the conference. Belgium is Europe's most densely populated country, and through its port of Antwerp, biggest in Europe, have passed most of the supplies which are bringing victory so near. Tomorrow, Bolivia in the ABCs. The Office of Price Administration today put almost the entire meat production of the country on points, everything but mutton, and the average point price is higher, too. Oleo goes up to 12 points a pound, which puts the housewife on a real spot. It isn't much comfort to know that butter at 24 points a pound will be more plentiful in May. At Albany today, Governor Dewey appointed Edward J. Neary, Nassau County District Attorney and wounded veteran of World War I, to be director of the new State Division of Veterans Affairs. Neary's job will be to direct a state program to aid an estimated 1.5 million New York veterans in adjusting themselves to civilian life. Some cold facts about the weather and the baseball scores will follow a word from Arthur Gary.
Today, when you asked your candyman for Peter Paul's Mounds, if he happened to be out of stock, think of the refreshment and cheer that bar of Mounds you missed may be bringing to some boy in service. An officer of the Marines writes, quote, "One thing the boys always like is candy," end quote. And imagine how those boys like to sink their teeth into a delicious, fresh bar of Peter Paul's Mounds. Creamy, pre-ripened coconut, covered all over with rich brown chocolate. Mounds are not only a delight to taste, they're packed with energy-giving nourishment. Chocolate Coconut Mounds. M-O-U-N-D-S. What a bar of candy for 5 cents. Now, back to Don Hollenbeck.
An important correction, that San Francisco program has been moved up to 6:30. The United Nations conference begins in 15 minutes from now from San Francisco. The weather forecast, showers, strong winds tonight, cooler tomorrow if that's possible, and clear. In the National League, the Giants shut out the Phillies 2-0, and the United Nations clothing collection won 70,000 pounds of used garments. Every fan who brought 7 pounds got in free. In the American League, Washington beat the Boston Red Sox 4-1. The St. Louis Browns won over Cleveland 4-3, and the Athletics beat the Yanks 7-5. The Germans in Italy are in complete collapse. Three-quarters of Berlin is in Russian hands. Stettin, Brno, and Bremen have been captured, and there's a report that Mussolini is in the hands of Italian patriots. With all the good news, it's well to note that American casualty figures today reached 929,373, and to make a date to see the newsreels this week, German prison camp pictures for remembering. The Army has warned high school students that the fad of prisoner of war insignia on their clothes might lead to their getting shot. And a Columbia psychologist today explains the PW fad is due to recent publicity over prison camps. Wonder how she explains those hats with light bulbs and boys wearing girls' hair bows.
Listen to Don Hollenbeck in the news every weekday evening at 6 o'clock. Today's program was presented by Peter Paul, makers of Chocolate Coconut Mounds.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.